From Altoona to Lebanon, Erie to Johnstown, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, President Donald Trump and U.S. Senator Dave McCormick headlined an Energy and Innovation Summit in Pittsburgh this past week, announcing over $90 billion in new private sector investment. David Taylor and Stephen Bloom are here for a Capital Watch discussion. Ladies and gentlemen, start your engines. The 2026 race for governor of Pennsylvania is set to begin. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. We are now more than 3 weeks past the deadline for a new state budget to be enacted, and the Democrat-controlled House of Representatives has finally passed a budget plan, but it is dead on arrival in the state Senate. House Democrats want to spend $50 billion during the current fiscal year, although that is nearly $3 billion more than the Commonwealth is projected to take in. The spending would also impact future budgets, further bloating the structural budget deficit that already exists. Senate Republicans are refusing to go along with the plan, calling it fiscally irresponsible. Several independent voters who have chosen not to register with a political party are now asking the state Supreme Court to declare unconstitutional the requirement that you must be registered in a given political party to vote in its primary. The independent voters argue they should be permitted to participate in a political party's primary, even though they have refused to register as a member of that party. No word yet on whether or not the high court will hear their arguments. In a blatant display of anti-Semitism, the National Education Association has passed a resolution to cut ties with the Anti-Defamation League, which is the most prominent pro-Jewish organization in the country. The League provides educational classroom materials teaching about anti-Semitism and the Holocaust. When asked by the Delaware Valley Journal about its stance on the issue, the Pennsylvania State Education Association, or PSEA, declined to comment. Vice President J.D. Vance was in Pennsylvania this past week, touting the benefits of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which passed Congress earlier this month. Vance appeared in the northeastern Pennsylvania congressional district, currently represented by first-term Republican Rob Bresnahan. The district is expected to be one of the top battleground districts in the nation in next year's congressional elections. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. $90 billion. That is the amount of new private investment in Pennsylvania's energy and artificial intelligence sectors announced during an Energy and Innovation Summit held in Pittsburgh this past week. The summit was organized by U.S. Senator Dave McCormick, with President Donald Trump as the featured speaker. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation are here for a Capital Watch discussion. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me on the program, my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks for being on the program.
Absolutely. Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we have exciting stuff to talk about that just the other day, I was out at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh for the Pennsylvania Energy and Innovation Summit organized by U.S. Senator Dave McCormick. And notably, that Senator McCormick, in welcoming people, said that this is the first annual summit of that kind. So we can expect this to be a recurring event under his leadership.
Because energy is such an important feature of Pennsylvania's economy and getting more so every day.
Absolutely. And the other part, the innovation, the work that is made possible because this kind of energy is available in Pennsylvania to be deployed in support of especially artificial intelligence and quantum computing, that these huge supercomputing facilities require enormous amounts of energy. And it was this summit that wound up being the gathering place for leaders across business, energy, and the high-tech advanced computing world. And of course, artificial intelligence is one of the key battlefields of national power at this point, because the technology will be so transformational that whichever country masters it first, dominates it, will, as a result, become the strongest nation on Earth. And so that's why there's such intense interest on this issue right now.
And there's a real opportunity, especially for Western Pennsylvania, where much of the natural resources that are useful to us economically, to the economy and people's needs, are located by virtue of where, you know, the rock formations.
Yes.
And just like in the old days when oil was discovered at Drake's Well in Pennsylvania, the economic interests flocked to that area.
Correct.
And so this is a real opportunity for Western Pennsylvania to have a resurgence that it hasn't had since the 1980s when the steel industry collapsed.
Absolutely, unquestionably. And the key element there, Steve, is the synergy between our very advanced institutions of higher learning like the Carnegie Mellon and the University of Pittsburgh and actually institutions all across the Commonwealth. There are also great opportunities for Northeastern Pennsylvania. And we saw a lot of that play out in the course of the announcements that the summit led to the announcement of $90 billion of investment in Pennsylvania. 90 billion with a B, and just million, billion, trillion, they sound the same. A billion is $1,000 million. So $90,000 million of investment coming to Pennsylvania and expected to be deployed in the near term. So we're talking about 12, 18, 24 months. Like, we're going to see an influx of capital and resulting activity really no one alive has seen here in Pennsylvania.
And when you talk about the $90 billion, I think for context, it's helpful, always at least to myself, to compare that with our state budget. Pennsylvania is one of the largest states. We have an annual budget somewhere in the ballpark of $50 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So $90 billion is more than an entire year.
Yes.
That one of the
almost
largest
double
states in America invest in its budget each, like that's to me it's a sign of the scale.
Yes. And so it was a real parade of dignitaries, of business leaders. Several members of the president's cabinet were there, the Secretary of the Treasury, the Secretary of the Interior, the Secretary of Energy, and the EPA administrator were all present. And I gotta say, all four of those individuals, extremely impressive people who are wasting no time, sparing no effort in deploying the pro-growth, pro-production, pro-energy agenda that President Trump was elected on. And just to start mentioning a few of these investments, that Google has a $3 billion deal with Brookfield Asset Management for electricity generated from two hydropower facilities in Pennsylvania. Google will also invest $25 billion in data centers across Pennsylvania and in neighboring states over the next 2 years. That the asset management firm Blackstone plans a $25 billion investment in data centers and energy infrastructure in Pennsylvania. Those are going to be in the Northeast, and that they're going to be co-located with new power plants, and that this is how they're going to bypass the restrictions on deploying pipeline. Much like the Procter & Gamble plant up in Wyoming County is, you know, that they had wells drilled right on site and that's what fuels that factory, that these data centers are going to have their own power plants right next door, and that will be through a new joint venture with PPL Corporation.
And if you think about it, you in your mind's eye, you might be thinking, oh, this is going to be a big factory of sorts, belching smoke and toxic materials out and all the caricatures. And it turns out that it's very much the opposite.
Yes.
And especially when you can co-locate that.
Yes.
There's not even the impact of a pipeline.
Correct.
Which is minimal anyway, but it makes it that much simpler, that much cleaner. And we're talking about facilities that are literally making the environment in Pennsylvania better compared to what was there in the past.
Yes. Yes, and all of these major businesses that are making these investments, that they are top of the field, state of the art, best practice type operations, and so you can be absolutely certain that these facilities will be as efficient and lean and clean as is possible in this earthly life. First Energy, the big nuclear provider, will invest $15 billion to expand power distribution, strengthen grid infrastructure, and operate the enhanced grid in 56 Pennsylvania counties. Meta Platforms, which is Facebook, said that they're going to spend hundreds of billions of dollars to build several massive AI data centers across the nation, including in Pennsylvania. The cloud infrastructure technology company CoreWeave plans to spend up to $6 billion on building a new artificial intelligence data center, and I believe that that's going to be in Lancaster. So this is all corners
statewide
of the Commonwealth. Yes. Constellation Energy will invest $2.4 billion to upgrade the Limerick nuclear power plant. Energy Capital Partners announced $5 billion plan to develop a data center at the York 2 Energy Center. So like these are these announcements, very large projects, large dollars, and a really impressive spread across the entire Commonwealth as to where these assets will be deployed. And that means jobs in construction and all of the things necessary to build these new data centers and to plug them into the grid, to build the new power plants, to make them run. And it's just, it's extremely exciting.
Geopolitical clout as well.
Yes, most definitely. And there were quite a number of international investments as well from Southeast Asia and in Singapore and from the Gulf states of the Middle East. Like Senator, and this is, I think there are a lot of takeaways. The number one takeaway is that Senator McCormick is not wasting any time, and he's not waiting for anybody to tell him to go be a consequential senator. He already is doing the work and making a big, big difference, as witnessed by this Energy and Innovation Summit that he just organized. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. And it was also, there was a lot of mention made about the senator's wife, Dina, that Dina McCormick is herself an exceptionally impressive person who has had some of the most senior roles in high finance and in diplomacy, that Dina grew up in Texas, but her parents are from Egypt, and that she grew up in her household speaking Arabic. And so this is how she has come to be a very prominent American diplomat when it comes to Middle Eastern matters, and that the Senator and Mrs. McCormick just came back from a tour of the Persian Gulf. And one thing leads to another, and certainly the Senator's personal diplomacy with his secret weapon, Dina, that this is what brought home to Pennsylvania some of these major investments. And so Senator McCormick is a difference maker. And that we haven't seen this kind of a leader in Pennsylvania for a long, long time.
Really, we're talking about unleashing the power of Pennsylvania energy. And as you noted, it's a high-stakes game with very influential, important, consequential people leading the fight here in Pennsylvania. So we're fortunate to have that sort of unexpected boost of political clout, especially, again, beyond the United States shores.
Yes.
In places where we need to make a difference and where diplomacy is important, but so is making economic arrangements that are mutually suitable.
Yes. And the thing is that once the initial investment is made and that's where these things are happening, that's where these things tend to continue to happen. And Pennsylvania has quite a number of innate competitive advantages that we, let's just be honest, that we haven't done enough to bring to bear to help Pennsylvania's
economy. Even worse, we've been hindering.
Well, yeah.
The
elected decision makers. Yes.
In many cases, our state government. Are stepping all over the efforts to make Pennsylvania a better, more attractive place to do business.
Yes. We have things that our competitor states lack. And along with having the incredible superabundance of energy that we are only beginning to mobilize. And not just the natural gas, although, Steve, this is a statistic. It's astonishing. So Pennsylvania's natural gas output, which is massive, number two in America behind only Texas, our current output is only about a quarter of what our maximum output could be. So that's how much bigger that industry could be and should be. But at the same time, at the Energy and Innovation Summit at Carnegie Mellon, that there were experts there who, like from Westinghouse, and that they are making progress with new small modular reactors. And you've heard me, the listeners have heard me on this program criticizing Governor Shapiro for mandating technologies that don't yet exist. I'm not talking about mandating them, but if somebody can show me that it works, I'm for it. You know, if they're willing to compete in the marketplace with everybody else, that's fantastic. We want as many electrons going into the grid as possible, and I really have no preference where they come from. And so to have a big incumbent nuclear players investing dollars in upgrading their facilities, upgrading the grid, generating more power, that's fantastic. That's all anybody has ever wanted of them. If these innovators can deploy new small modular nuclear reactors and that it's effective and affordable, that's amazing. And I sat at dinner with a fellow from Germany who says that they have made fusion reactions, that fusion works. And he seemed like a perfectly sensible fellow. If he's telling the truth and that's really happening, then yeah, the world is going to be a very different place. But it's in welcoming the new technologies, welcoming the pursuit of expanded generation capacity from all sources, again, based on price in the marketplace, show me that these things are effective, that by the simple act of demonstrating that we in Pennsylvania want these things to happen and we want these things to happen here, that all by itself is a signal change.
It's an opportunity for abundance. And the storehouse of energy here in Pennsylvania, the things you mentioned, plus the new technology, things that we don't even quite understand yet, it can take us to an era where energy becomes, in a way, a second thought, because we have the resources here in Pennsylvania.
Correct.
We could have very, very inexpensive access to all the electricity that Pennsylvania already is generating. We're the number one exporter of electricity.
Correct.
Number two producer of natural gas. These are large scale reserves. These are the once in a millennium type of opportunity where there is an abundance of energy presented to us that it's relatively easy to get at. It's very clean compared to all other energy resources, and it's right here at our fingertips in Pennsylvania.
Right, right, right. And then to deploy that in support of a technology as transformational as artificial intelligence, this synergy, this dynamism is going to take us places that we honestly can't even quite imagine yet. But for Pennsylvania to be the place where it happens in the way that we saw, you know, that the software revolution came out of Seattle and that the computer revolution came out of Silicon Valley, that with this deployment, with this announcement of major expenditures by leading players in that field of artificial intelligence, with those things happening in Pennsylvania, it opens the door. It opens the door that artificial intelligence, this could happen here and be as transformational for Pennsylvania as software was for Washington State, as computers were for California.
And, you know, one of the watchwords was always all of the above in mm-hmm. terms of energy. And, of course, it still applies. But I think the one that certainly maybe is a little more specific and very important is reliability and affordability.
Yes.
As the things we look for when it comes to energy sources.
Yes.
Is it reliable? Is it affordable? And, of course, we'll look at safety and environmental impact and all those things, too. Also very important. But the key is we want to make sure that the grid and our other sources are reliable and affordable so that we have access to that 24/7, every day of the year, no matter what, adequate electric supply, not only for our current needs, but those future needs you've been talking
about.
Yes,
yes. And to build out at a rate at least as fast, but hopefully faster than the growing rate of demand, because in every way that matters, energy is life, and our very high and ever-rising rate of energy consumption is commensurate with our very high and ever-rising standard of living. And I was a guest. My friends at West Virginia Manufacturers had me out to Wheeling for an event, and they call it real energy: reliable, efficient, affordable, and local. And I think that that local part is also very critical, because when it comes to something as important as energy, if you have extended supply lines, as America had in the 70s when we were captive to, you know, cargo ships coming over from, you know, tankers from foreign countries bringing us petroleum, having energy that is reliable, efficient, affordable, and local, that makes
a great
real
acronym.
Energy.
That's a great acronym.
So it is, yeah, it, you know, a lot of times we're, you know, we watch what happens, or more importantly, what doesn't happen in Harrisburg, and it gets kind of discouraging, because rarely do you see, you know, real visionary leadership, people looking down the road, even with this current budget, 2-3 years down the road, and what the financial implications are for continued overspending right now. To be at an event like this one that Senator McCormick hosted really does give one hope for the future, that big things are still possible in Pennsylvania, and that we do have leaders in government, yes, but also in the private sector and in academia, who want to bring this opportunity and make it real. So anyway, good show. I was lucky to be at that event, and thanks to Senator McCormick and his team and all of the various presenters and members of the president's cabinet and stuff. This is about all the time that we have, so we'll wrap up. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your group and what you do?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org on the internet.
Outstanding. And as always, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. And from Steve and me, thanks to all of you for listening. And we will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. The race for governor of Pennsylvania will top next year's ballot, and the time is at hand for candidates to declare their intentions. Unlike 2022, when there was a crowded Republican primary ballot, voters next year will have fewer choices. On the Democratic side, incumbent Governor Josh Shapiro is likely to run unopposed or face token opposition to his renomination. Republicans fielded 9 candidates in 2022, but only 2 or 3 candidates are likely to be on the ballot next year. U.S. Representative Dan Muser had been touring the state and scuffling with Shapiro as he pondered a run for the state's top office. However, he recently announced that he would not run for governor and instead would remain in Congress, where the GOP holds a slim majority. Speculation now centers on 2 other potential candidates: State Treasurer Stacey Garrity and State Senator Doug Mastriano. Garrity has twice won statewide office. She won re-election as State Treasurer last year, garnering the most votes ever for a statewide candidate in Pennsylvania. Mastriano was the GOP's nominee in 2022. He scored an impressive primary election victory, but then failed to build upon that base, ultimately losing to Shapiro in a landslide. There are many reasons for the smaller field of potential GOP candidates, not the least of which, unlike 2022, when then-Governor Tom Wolf was term-limited and could not run, there will be an incumbent seeking re-election in 2026. That makes winning the general election more difficult. Prior to the 1968 State Constitutional Convention, Pennsylvania governors were limited to one term. In 1974, Milton Schapp became the first governor eligible to run for a second term, which he succeeded in doing by defeating the Republican nominee, Drew Lewis. That commenced a decades-long tradition of governors serving 2 consecutive terms, with the office swinging back and forth between the Republican and Democratic parties every 8 years. That held true until 2014, when Tom Wolf defeated incumbent Governor Tom Corbett, who became the first and so far only governor to be denied a second term. Looking back, challengers to incumbent governors seeking re-election have not been successful. In 1982, a wave election year for Democrats, Congressman Ellen Ertl came close to defeating incumbent Governor Dick Thornburgh. He fell short. Challengers after that did not fare well. Auditor General Barbara Hafer lost in a landslide to incumbent Governor Robert P. Casey Sr. in the 1990 election. State Representative Ivan Itkin was steamrolled by Governor Tom Ridge in 1998. Former Pittsburgh Steeler Lynn Swann suffered the same fate, running against Governor Ed Rendell in 2006. As mentioned, the streak was broken in 2014 when Tom Wolf defeated incumbent Governor Tom Corbett. In 2018, Republican Scott Wagner failed to oust Governor Tom Wolf from the governor's residence. So that and next year's election will determine if a new two-term cycle begins. On the surface, Governor Josh Shapiro appears to be a formidable candidate. He won convincingly in 2022, albeit against a weak campaign. He was a serious contender to be Kamala Harris's running mate in last year's presidential election. But as the saying goes, his support is like the Susquehanna River, a mile wide and an inch deep. Fault lines appeared during his brief time on the national stage. The Democratic Party is deeply divided over the Israeli-Palestine issue. Being Jewish, it is not an issue Shapiro can sidestep. Shapiro has given lip service to school choice, but he has failed to deliver, angering partisans on both sides of the issue. His administration's inept handling and lack of candor surrounding a sexual harassment issue involving one of his cabinet secretaries is a festering wound. Next year, Shapiro will be facing a vastly different political landscape. His party's lead in registered voters has virtually vanished. In 2022, Democrats held a 507,000 voter lead over registered Republicans. That lead is down to about 175,000 and dropping. And Donald Trump is back in the White House with a vested interest in derailing Shapiro's own presidential ambitions. Shapiro's national profile is both a plus and a minus. On the plus side, he will be able to tap into the Democratic Party's national fundraising base, meaning he will likely be able to raise significantly more dollars than his Republican opponent. The flip side to that coin is the GOP candidate can raise money from those who want to knock Shapiro out of presidential contention. Thus, the 2026 gubernatorial campaign is shaping up to be vastly different from 2022. For now, Josh Shapiro is the clear front runner. But 1 year ago, hardly anyone would have predicted Dave McCormick would defeat incumbent U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. That is why we have elections. Anything can, and often does, happen. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WBFD-FM in Bedford, WBVP-AM and WMBA-AM in Beaver Falls, along with WFRM-AM in Counterpoint, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.